Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks that are moving. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 132. And with a special edition today, we've got Thanksgiving turkeys. That's right. Some of the biggest losers of the last year, including Peloton, that pandemic darling running out of steam, Anaplan, which does not seem to have a plan, and the kind of incredible story of a company being investigated by the Justice Department, hearing aid maker Eargo, which also saw its stock collapse. We'll have all that and one happy story, an interesting story of Planet Labs looking at a SPAC IPO coming soon. We're going to talk to the CEO, Will Marshall. But first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And it is good to listen to the Drill Down podcast. It is better to subscribe to the Drill Down podcast, and you can do that on any of your favorite podcast platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, you name it. But hit the subscribe button to make sure you catch every show.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Braintrust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Braintrust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit Braintrust.com, that's Braintrust.com, to learn more.
All right, we are with the Drill Down right now, looking at business stories behind stocks on the move. Joining me, as always, executive producer Isaac Webster from lovely Southern California. How is lovely Southern California?
Sunny LA. It's sunny today. Is it sunny up in the Bay?
It actually is a beautiful day in the Bay Area today. We're going to have a lovely Thanksgiving. It's been kind of nice all week.
Nice. Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Are they coming to take you away?
I don't know. We should wait till they pass.
Should we? I like it. It's perfect for this Thanksgiving turkey edition of the Drill Down podcast. I like it because these stocks have all been taken out to the cleaners. All the companies we're going to look at today have seen a massive decline in their share prices. Why don't we start with Peloton?
Peloton. Now, you know, I ride my Peloton almost every day.
I didn't know this, actually. I was wondering when I started working on this today, because you seem like you're incredibly fit, and it's a Peloton kind of guy, but I didn't know if you had also moved on from the Peloton as investors have.
I have not moved on, even though we have also invested in a Tonal, but I am still a huge Peloton fan, so full disclosure there.
Well, you say you've invested in a Tonal. But you bought a Tonal.
Yeah, exactly.
How is that an
investment? We've invested in ourselves by buying a Tonal.
Jesus.
That was a good commercial, and they're not paying me, so who knows? So Peloton, though, I'm a huge Peloton fan, but this story that you're about to tell is very disheartening as a Peloton rider. Peloton trades under PTON, and shares have plummeted around 58% lower in a year.
Yeah, I mean, you can love the product and not like the company or not want to own the stock, and some stocks maybe get expensive because the companies aren't doing well. Maybe all of the people who wanted a Peloton got a Peloton. Certainly, we've seen a huge fall off in the growth perspective of the company. So what's happened in the last year, right? So we had huge sales of Pelotons going in, an IPO right before the pandemic. People buying Pelotons, desperately trying to find some way to stay in shape as gyms were closed throughout the pandemic. But then we started to see a real slowdown in their business. And quarterly sales were actually down in the fourth quarter compared to the third quarter, the fiscal fourth quarter, and down again the subsequent quarter. They had the problems with their treadmill, some lawsuits over injuries to the treadmill when they were trying to expand their business beyond the bicycles that sold so well. When these problems hit the company, it looked like a big problem indeed. Of course, they also were big victims of and continue to be big victims of the problems getting parts for to make their bikes. They want to have to build a factory, what they're calling their Peloton Output Park, or POP, which is ridiculous. Wow. They can't call it a factory.
Maybe they can do a live show from the POP. Yeah.
Well, the POP build out is a very expensive one for a company without a lot of money. So in the most recent quarter, things are so bad. We heard the chief financial officer, Jill Woodworth, actually talking about whether or not they even had enough money to do all the things that they wanted to do and whether they actually had a need to raise additional capital, coming out very clearly and saying they did not have that need. Of course, just a few weeks afterward, they announced they were going to have to go out and sell some more stock to raise some more capital. But in the last conference call on November 4th, we did, in fact, hear Jill Woodworth talking about cutting to the chase when asked the question, are they going to need to raise additional capital? Are they going to be able to make the investments in their pop, in their factory? And is the problem treadmills, or is it just people don't want to buy these bikes anymore? Here's Jill Woodworth.
Cutting to the chase, we don't see the need for any additional capital raise based on our current outlook. As we mentioned, we're taking significant steps to adjust our expenses across COGS and OPEX with this revised revenue guidance. And we have a lot of levers to pull. In addition, what we're also going to do is reevaluate the cadence of some of the capital investments that we're making inclusive of POP. And while we know that POP is a decades-long right-term strategic move for us, there are definitely ways for us to find ways to make that a more economical spend over the next couple of years. In terms of your first question, certainly I would say, as we think about the three or four contributors to the reduction of guide, I would say, you know, bike portfolio is the largest. And that is obviously a decrease in the demand profile.
So let's think about what you just said there. The reduction of guide means we're going to have less revenues. The decrease in the demand profile means no one wants to buy the bikes. Is that really that hard to say?
Well, I mean, you know, these bikes are expensive. They're not cheap.
And they're not for everybody.
And the treadmills are also, so I feel like there are possibly a limited amount of people in the world that this is going to appeal
possibly?
To.
Possibly?
Yeah, well. I'm trying to be very cautious about what I say.
I don't know why. So that's what we see with that reduction of the stock price. That's what we see from the reduction in the guide and the decrease in the demand profile for Peloton.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
Let's look at Anaplan, a stock that has collapsed this Thanksgiving week.
Now, I'm not familiar with Anaplan. I don't ride an Anaplan every day like I do Peloton, but Anaplan trades under PLAN plan, and shares have fallen 34% over the past 12 months.
Indeed, they have. And indeed, in the last week, they're down about 27%. Anaplan and trading at a 52-week low. This was an $85 stock about a year ago. Now it's trading at $44. This stock has collapsed because the business has stopped growing as fast as it had been. This is one of those hot software as a service companies selling business planning software. That's why it's in a plan. It's business planning software. People at these businesses do indeed ride that plan. But the growth profile, you know, on some counts, this just looked like a great, you know, revenues were up, customers were up, billings were up. But the pace of billings growth, which is what, you know, this is a money-losing company, right? It's a profit-free company, profit-free, fast-growing tech company. Well, the billings growth slowed down, and that was a concern. And the company, you know, billings had been growing at about 30%. The quarter they just reported, billings of $183 million were growing at just 26%. Now they're warning that billings next quarter will only be about 23.5%. And then more importantly, or to me, this is always the big tell. Now they're saying, yeah, I don't look at billings. In fact, we're going to stop giving you forecasts of billings starting next quarter. Don't look at billings anymore. You really shouldn't even look at how many deals we do in any quarter. You should look at like 12-month trailing basis. And from that perspective, you know, just look at things the way we want you to look at them, and they will look a whole lot better. Here is the Anaplan CFO, Vikas Mehta, talking about how their deals actually work and how he would prefer that we look at those deals.
What we typically see is that our deals are generally, you know, take 6 to 12 months in terms of sales cycles, and that is why we have recommended looking at trailing 12 months as a much better indicator of the underlying growth. We talked about that in the prepared remarks also, but if you look at it from that perspective, our billings growth was 32% and our CRPO bookings growth was 30% on a trailing 12-month basis. So overall, pleased with the results, and we remain confident and in terms of our pipeline and outlook, and that is the reason why we even raised our guide going into FY 23 as well as ending the year FY 22.
So don't look at the new numbers. Just give bigger weight to the old numbers and then we'll look better. That was the take from this company. Is anyone falling for that? The stock price suggests not. Another turkey for your Thanksgiving, Isaac.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. Someone had to say it, right?
No, no one had to say that.
Corey, what is your next drill down?
Let's look at Eargo, a former unicorn from Silicon Valley, publicly traded as of last October. That is about 13 months ago. Eargo.
All right. Narumi reminded me today that unicorns aren't real. So just a reminder.
Your daughter reminded you that unicorns are not real?
Yeah.
Well, neither was Eargo's growth, apparently, but please.
Eargo trades under EAR, E-A-R, and shares have fallen 86% in a year.
Yeah, this was a company that had a, it's got a great ticker, right? EAR.
Yeah, Ken.
Maybe that right there, that's something to be worried about. This is a company, Eargo, that had a, better than a $2 billion market cap a year ago. Now it's got a $230 million market cap. A massive collapse in this company so soon after its IPO. Here's how it sounded exciting. And if you look at like Engadget and all the tech geeks, they love this stuff, right? It was a virtually invisible hearing aid, medical grade hearing aids that consumers want to use, they would say in their prospectus, citing that hearing loss is the third most common medical condition in the U.S. after, I don't know, what do you think, Isaac? FOMO?
Possibly, yeah.
Is FOMO that a medical condition? Cancer?
It is in some
diabetes?
Circles. Yeah. FOMO is not the same as diabetes, I don't think.
No, it is not. No one's got FOMO regarding diabetes, unless I guess you fear of missing out when you don't want the diabetes. diabetes, cancer, hearing loss, third most common medical conditions in the U.S. Eargo like to talk about that total addressable market. Eargo like to talk about the underserved market of people with hearing loss of 43 million adults and 465 million adults globally, 43 million in the U.S. Yeah, that was cute. Well, some problems started to occur as they reported earnings. And I'm going to try to give this to you chronologically as the stock started to drift. So they reported a fine June quarter, but if you looked through the balance sheet, you would have noticed that receivables jumped big time. Now, again, these guys sell hearing aids. Hearing aids are often expensive, $2,000, $3,000 for a set of hearing aids. And you can adjust these with your iPhone. That was what was supposedly so cool about these Eargo hearing aids. Well, receivables, which is to say customers who haven't yet paid for a product, went from $5 million in the March quarter to $15 million in the June quarter. And it was a question, kind of, well, what's going on there? Well, in August, when they filed their 10Q, buried in the details of that 10Q, they explained that there was a claims audit by their largest third-party payer. And so all of a sudden, 80% of gross accounts receivable by the end of June were one customer that was auditing what the heck all these bills were coming from Eargo and if they needed to be paid. And because of that audit, they hadn't been paid from that customer since March 31st. Well, in September, they talked to a Wells Fargo healthcare conference CEO, Christian Gormson, and I'm going to play the sound from the CEO, what he had to say about that audit and why it wasn't getting resolved faster. But about 2 weeks after the soundbite, which I'm about to play for you, about 2 weeks afterwards, apparently the company that was doing the audit said, yeah, don't talk to us anymore. Talk to the Justice Department. My dog just got very upset about that. Did you hear that?
Wow, that was a right on cue.
Nikki, talk to the Justice Department.
Well done, Nikki.
My dog might have a run-in with the Justice Department soon. Yes, so the Justice Department apparently has taken over this probe of these billings. And indeed, the company is now being investigated. Eargo is being investigated for insurance fraud. Specifically, insurance claims they submitted on behalf of customers covered by federal employee health plans. Now, it's alleged only at this point, but investors have certainly sold the stock. The company has withdrawn all of its guidance. They couldn't even file their quarterly documents on time. Their 10Q couldn't be filed for the most recent quarter. They didn't even do an earnings conference call. At their annual meeting of investors, they also didn't take any questions at all, saying they couldn't answer any questions about the probe. But here is Christian Gormanson. When asked about, well, why is this client audit taken so long? Shouldn't this thing be wrapped up by now? Here he is talking just 2 weeks before we find out this thing had actually been referred to the Justice Department.
So this is more about defining a process moving forward, right? So it's not a withholding, or there's nothing sort of punitive in the discussion. So the discussion has been very constructive. They've been giving us, you know, applauses for product and delivery and price point.
Applauses.
Which is something that they actually appreciate. You know, in terms of closing the audit, we don't know, right? Because we need the payer to sort of go through their internal checks and balances, and compliance is a huge deal with any health plan, right? And especially when you're working with the federal government. So it has to go through their internal compliance and so on. But again, it's not us presenting something or them reviewing something. It's actually them and us developing something together.
Yeah, well, the thing they're developing together apparently is an investigation by the Justice Department. Next time you hear a company is getting applauses, I guess what that means is they're getting referred to the Justice Department for a criminal investigation for insurance fraud. Duly noted.
I like that redefinition.
All right, well, coming up, we're going to talk to a company that's got something a little more positive for our Thanksgiving feast here. A company that's coming to the public market soon through a SPAC with our friend DMY Technologies, Niccolo De Masi. And a company that I've actually followed for a long time as a private company, Planet, formerly known as Planet Labs. CEO Will Marshall is going to join us. And it is a super cool company, way ahead in the space race. And as I mentioned, about to be listed in a public SPAC. We're going to talk to the CEO and Niccolo De Masi as well right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Braintrust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Braintrust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit Braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
All right, welcome to the Drill Down podcast. We are joined right now by Will Marshall, who is the CEO of a company that Niccolo De Masi, our old friend and frequent guest, is and importantly, investor in the Business Podcast Network, is joining us and bringing to the public markets. Niccolo, tell me what it is about this company that seemed like the right idea at the right time.
I've actually been pursuing Planet, Corey, since our first SPAC. This is our fourth, and I like to say that we get better at it every transaction. Planet is a truly remarkable business. We think it's important for humanity and the Fortune 500 alike. Believe it or not, Corey, it's a business that has the largest competitive lead we've ever seen. So you're probably used to software businesses having kind of a one-year coding advantage. In Planet's, and that's usually fatal, by the way, for everybody else in the space. In Planet's case, they've got, we estimate a 5 to 7 year lead over anybody else trying to build up a constellation of the 200 satellites they have today. It is a truly commanding position, very high barriers to entry. And most importantly, you know, whilst this business kind of looks like, I like to call it Apple in the sky, it's a data company at its core. So they use their hardware platform and their software expertise to deliver data, much like a Bloomberg terminal or kind of like Google does for more terrestrial activities. But Planet is effectively indexing the entire Earth every day and making it searchable. They're serious about software, so they build their own hardware. They're a vertically integrated business. So Will and team pioneered Agile Aerospace, and they're able to actually do everything from build their own satellites to think about them, design them in-house, all from San Francisco. We love the high return on invested capital this company has demonstrated in the past 11 years. And they're going to have a tremendous amount of capital after this transaction closes on December 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, with which to invest in high ROI activities like growing their sales team, growing their software business. Last thing I'll say, Corey, is strong backers, CPPIB, BlackRock, Koch, Mark Benioff, I think it's his largest personal investment. This is a business that we think is going to be the most valuable in the entire space category because all the value we think is going to be in the data. And Will Marshall, who's a fellow physicist, of course, is part of the sustainability revolution. We expect that their data is going to be almost the standard requirement for everybody globally, including governments looking to track climate change emissions and how they're doing against the goals they've just agreed in Scotland a few days ago.
Yeah. Will, I was, I think we first, I was trying to remember when we started this this little chat here, our first encounter, and Planet, it was kind of really early days at Planet, as I recall. And it was, I was looking at it sort of as a, not necessarily a project, but as a, the initial principal business use case was examining what was happening on crops and individual farms and really understanding from space what was happening and what had happened over time in certain plots of land down to kind of small levels. Is that a fair way to look at the business?
Yeah. I mean, so the quick snapshot of Planet is that we have 200 satellites that image the entire Earth every day. And yes, agriculture is one of the biggest applications of that. 25% of the landmass of the Earth is agricultural land, and we can help. We can tell crop type and crop yield in every 3x3 meter box that enables the farmers to then decide where to add fertilizer, when to add water, when to harvest. It's called precision agriculture or digital agriculture, and it helps them improve crop yields by 20 or 40%. And we can do so. We mainly work with the big ag companies that provide that intelligence to farmers. But that's only one of, you know, dozens of applications of the satellite data, but it is our biggest market.
Well, I don't want to 100% get to the larger, all the things the company can do, but I think when we focus on those individual use cases, start to make sense why taking pictures from the space has some functionality. And there's change involved in this. So I have a cousin who's about my age. He's the third generation to farm the same plot of land in Iowa. The farm has gotten a lot bigger. They've acquired a lot of land around them over the decades. But there are spots, you know, it's one of those rare spots in Iowa where there's actually a hill. And it's not completely flat everywhere. And so there are different parts of that plot of land that have different uses of water. But I suspect, if my conservative cousin will admit to climate change, and he would know about it better than any of us, that what that piece of land that we should know in our family for the last, call it 80 years, probably isn't as knowable anymore because climate change is really changing what is available in terms of the water, the natural irrigation, and even artificial irrigation that has governed that land for generations.
Yeah, I mean, look, soil health has been depleted. We are seeing climatic events. It is caused by humans. There's not a discussion about that anymore. And satellite data is what you need to respond because it enables you to have that intelligence to more smartly use your resources and adapt to climatic events.
So what are the other business use cases of the 200 satellites?
Yeah, so off the top, civil government, they use it for things like disaster response, so floods, fires. We're recently helping the government in Germany respond to the unprecedented floods there, both for the first responders and to help them to assess the risk for future floods and damage. And we've been recently working with the state of California with the fires and the big wildfires here, helping them again with first responders and work to try and prevent future mega fires like clearing and fire lanes and this sort of thing. We also work with state and local.
Let's drill down on the fire example. Tell me more about how that works.
Yeah, so we image the whole planet every day, and we can see any fire, the Pacific, where is the fire front, where is the smoke blowing, when's it going to approach which hill, and then that then helps the firefighters literally determine where should they put people to put it out. So that's the sort of real-time piece. And then there's a second piece, which is because we can tell vegetation mass because of our spectral bands, we can actually tell where is the woods and fodder. We mapped every tree in California, and we can tell where's the fodder for future megafires and then help their precision interventions to help prevent megafires in the future.
It's fascinating stuff. How much has it changed? You know, since we first talked, my goodness, it's at least
five years,
if not 7 years ago. Presumably there's technologies available to you that weren't available 5 or 7 years ago?
Well, so firstly, we completed our goal of imaging the whole world every day. We got to that about a year or two after we spoke. So that involved launching all these, the rest of the satellites to complete the system. And we've now collected 1,500 images for every point on the Earth's landmass. So it's a deep stack of imagery from which to train algorithms, which is what I'd say is the main answer to your question. The huge evolution of the last few years has been on the AI, especially in computer vision, which is the subfield of AI that's all dealing with extracting information out of imagery. And so, you know, just like the computer vision developed by Google and Apple and Facebook and others for extracting videos, for the cats and dogs out of pictures and videos, we can extract features from our imagery. There's a road, there's a plane, this is a train, this is a ship, this is a house. And then we can do that on an automated basis. So we can detect all those objects around the planet every day and help people make smarter decisions without having to look at all the images.
That's the magic, right? With all of the data you capture, that's really charming. Well, for just imaging the Earth, I'm going to use the example that we used when we first talked 7 or 8 years ago. So when longer ago than that, let's call it 15 years ago, I had actually rented out some satellite time or some satellite imagery. I was short, it was when I was a hedge fund manager, and I was short this company that claimed to be drilling an oil well to a certain depth. And I had satellites going overhead to figure out if they were actually using as much casing to case the well that to suggest that they actually were going deeper than they had gone in the past, or if they were just lying in press releases to get the stock price to go up late, go up more. I think it was the latter, and the satellite imagery sort of proved that. But there weren't a lot of satellites going over this third world country and, you know, where they claim to be drilling this well. The advantage of the stock promotion was that no one was there to check the actual truth. And indeed, there weren't a lot of satellites going over there. I guess the world or space is no longer looks like what it did in 2007, 2008, when I was short that stock.
No, it sure doesn't. There's been a lot of developments in space since then. We've seen rockets come down in cost, especially with SpaceX. But and that's caused about a 4x reduction in the cost of launch. But even more dramatically, the capabilities in a satellite have gone up about 1,000-fold for a given cost. The cost performance of satellites has increased 1,000-fold in the last 5 to 10 years, which is dramatic, right? This is like an industry going. Why? It's like the like the mainframe to desktop revolution in computing. Well, it's exactly because of the underlying developments in Moore's law. What is happening is the miniaturization of electronics.
But Moore's law hasn't increased. But Moore's law hasn't increased 1,000% in the last 5 to 10 years.
Well, it's getting there. It goes up a lot. It's a combination of two things. So it's firstly and that's the dominant thing, and that is what enables us to get our satellites to produce better and better data sets. So just last year, we improved the amount of data collection from our satellites 5x over the previous year, by adding more spectral bands, increasing the radio speeds, increasing the camera size. We went from a 29 megapixel camera to a 47 megapixel camera, et cetera, et cetera. But you're right that there was a jump in there that happened because of a different factor, which is that the space industry had been taking a very risk-averse approach. And they'd be designing satellites over a decade, launching them. They cost $1 billion, and everything had to work right. And then they would last 20 years. Well, that's because the space industry took this very low risk approach of saying it's got to work. We're spending $1 billion, so we better make it work. We've taken a very different risk approach, which is we put up a lot of satellites. And if one fails, it's not the end of the world. We just swap it out like you would with a server farm. And that enables us to take the latest technology. See, when I was at NASA and even in the other Earth imaging companies, they use antiquated technology. And the reason is that if you take a risk approach that it's got to work, the only things you put on the satellite are the things that you've already tested in space that work. Well, then that means you just keep on using the old technology. Right. Literally, the last Mars probe that NASA sent, which has which cost $2.5 billion, the best camera has is a 2 megapixel camera, which is like 90s style technology. And the best processor speed is like a is like a 30 megahertz processor. You can't even find a 30 megahertz processor these days. They have to keep special lines still producing chips that no one else is even interested in. So you can take a risk approach of saying, we've got to have it exactly work every time with 99% probability of success. Or you can say, well, I don't mind a few failures. I don't mind if it's 5 or 10% probability of failure. I prefer to have the better technology. So we treat space like Moore's Law.
Right.
And just like you don't want a three-year-old phone in your back pocket, you don't want a three-year-old satellite in space. They're obsolete. So we're constantly iterating to have the best systems in orbit. And that has enabled us to do this 1,000x improvement in cost performance of satellites.
Niccolo, let me ask you about when we look at the kind of, because I know when you've done these SPACs and your SPACs have been so successful they performed well in the market, I should say. I don't remove any sort of judgment, my own judgment for that. But the SPACs have done so well, I think because the businesses underlying have done well. And that means you've done the work to figure out where the most value is in the sectors that they are in. So therefore, let me ask you, where is the most value in the business of space?
Yeah, we believe firmly it's in the data, Corey. We don't think there's value in tourism long-term. We think getting a hitchhiker's guide to getting things into orbit, if you will, is getting commoditized. And to this extent, we believe that Will is in a quasi-monopolistic position. He has such a commanding lead. If you look at the total number of satellites, the total amount of data he's got, the total size of his data repository over the past, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years he's been collecting to train AI algorithms. It's really just night and day. In the tech markets, Corey, as you're a student, success begets success. Network effects are very, very strong. And we expect that the 800-pound gorilla that is Planet today will end up being the 900 and 1,000-pound gorilla in the coming years, particularly as this IPO raises their profile, enables them to become effectively a household name, improves attraction, you know, and retention of talent, already going well, by the way, because of the mission. And it gives them capital and a currency to also grow inorganically, not just organically. So I think, Corey, you can hold me to this. I expect Planet will be one of, if not the most valuable space business in the coming decade overall.
I wish you well. Prove to me that might be the case. So I get these guys are good. I get these guys have got the data. I get these guys have been doing it for a while. But why is this the segment? Like, why isn't space tourism a bigger business? Why isn't the management of other people's satellites a bigger business? Why isn't setting candles on fire and sending this shit up to the moon or near or out further, not to the moon, to the sky, to low Earth or far Earth orbit. Why isn't that a better business?
Let me jump in.
Will and I both have opinions of this one, but Will, you go first.
Will.
Yeah. I mean, look.
Go ahead, Will.
Fundamentally, space tourism is exciting. I don't think it's a huge market. The big markets of the planet are to do with the Earth economy. Okay. So, The biggest two transitions of the global economy is the digital transformation of industries and the sustainable transformation of industries. And Planet's data is relevant to both. So digital transformation is where big data and AI allowing those traditional industries to modernize, like in agriculture. That's the example we just talked about. Tens of percent improvement in efficiency to a big $1 trillion industry is a big deal. And in sustainability transformation, if we want to move to a sustainable economy, we've got to track natural capital. What we've got to do is basically put natural capital into the economic system. All the countries and all the companies that are making their sustainability targets, the very next step is measurement. They've got to find where are they going? And that's where satellite data comes in. As like Bloomberg, who just gave a $25 million grant towards our next generation of satellite systems, always likes to say, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And so Planet's data is fundamental to the transition to a sustainable economy. Look, I think the reduction in launch costs of 4x and the reduction in increase in cost capability of satellites by 1,000x are really exciting. But you know what's more exciting than either of those two things? It's the data. The data is what's powering the global economy. The economists quip data is the new oil. And I think that is a really good, analogy. Oil powers lots of industries, car industries, transportation, maritime, various manufacturing systems. You have to refine it to a certain level to make it work. But once you do, it enables lots of industries. The only difference with data is that A, it's not dirty. It's clean. And B, you can use it multiple times. You can only use a gallon of petrol once. You can use a set of data multiple times.
Yeah.
And so it's a one to many. Well,
and it's
business.
Also about the, and it's about the usage of it and the understanding of it, right? I've always said, like, you know, as much as I love the oil business, you know, you can only make so much more money in oil. There's a lot more money to be made off oil, right? It's the things that you do with it, whether it's, you know, plastics or cars or whatever. You know, those are better businesses and bigger businesses. Niccolo, let me ask you just from a financial engineering standpoint, not engineering, but how did you get these guys to sign up with you? I mean, this has been a hotly pursued company for a long time.
Well, look, I mean, we are the number one best performing SPAC franchise in the world. Our investor base is strong. And my partner, Harry, and I have shown that we know how to obviously set up great companies to be successful public companies, particularly in the first few earnings calls in the first, you know, year or two. We're really sort of the men are sort of from the boys, as they say. I'd like to think that Will feels we've added value in the SPAC IPO process and obviously in the capital raise, and hopefully we will continue to do the same, you know, as board members. You're right that, you know, Planet had every option under the sun. It's a high quality team, high quality asset. I mean, very, very unique asset, of really a market of one when it comes to whole earth daily scan or twice daily scan. Fortunately, the SPAC process has some advantages if you're a, you know, top three, top five sponsor. Allows us to bring in some strategic capital, allows us to think carefully who we want to have as a shareholder base, allows us to, you know, to have a much more open IPO process, Corey. There's a lot of retail interest in Planet because, look, there's 130,000 Twitter followers. Everyone cares about climate change. No one knows how to get involved in helping the planet. This is an IPO where, you know, you're getting involved in helping the planet here by becoming a shareholder. And we've seen the momentum in the stock, I think, as both retail institutions have begun to hear the story and hear about, you know, the tremendous future this company has in the next decade.
Well, it's just amazing where we've gone in, you know, call it 20 years since, what was it called, Keyhole Earth Viewer CDs would show you some pictures from space. And you know, now this is just amazing stuff with Planet. It'll be interesting to see, Will Marshall, what you and the people at Planet are able to do with all of this data. And we'll certainly watch the company and the stock, for that matter. Niccolo de Masi, who found the company, is bringing the company public through a SPAC, thanks to DMY Technology and all of the DMY efforts. And Will Marshall, CEO of Planet, formerly Planet Labs, is that right?
Yeah, well, so we go with Planet, absolutely, and it's going to be PL on the New York Stock Exchange, which is excited about right now. Of course, the DMY is DMYQ, but it transitioned to that. Look, I think, like Niccolo said, it's going to be exciting. We've got the space piece, which is exciting for people. But most importantly, we're a data company that I think a lot of people will see the value of. And then the particular relevance to sustainability is huge. And the whole world is turning its attention to that. And that's not just a small matter. I just came back from the climate conference in Glasgow, and all the commitments need our data, whether it's ending deforestation, the emissions reductions, protecting the oceans, they all need our data. And we're excited to help catalyze the transition to a sustainable economy.
Well, God knows we all need that to work. Niccolo de Masi of DMY and Will Marshall of Planet. We're coming up next on the Drill Down. We've got one number that's going to tell you a whole lot about Planet when the Drill Down continues.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to Drill Down every day. You can listen to all of our old shows, our new shows, whatever you want. You can do that on your smart speaker by saying to your smart speaker, play the latest Drill Down podcast, and you'll hear our most recent show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod, and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, we're back with the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. Isaac, here's a number. The number of satellites already launched by Planet is super impressive. You know, we have so many of these companies that go public, particularly through SPACs, where they're going to make an electric car, they're going to launch a rocket ship, they're going to. These guys have already done it. They have launched, and here's that number, 462 satellites.
Wow.
Just super impressive that they've already got this business up and going. the degree to which they cover the Earth and that they can see so many things and have 30 plus petabytes of data on the Earth, all machine learning analyzed, so you can kind of pick out what you need and not have to source through it. I think that's the real secret sauce. It'll be interesting to see how they grow this business now that we'll be able to see quarterly numbers. I don't care how the stock performs. These are very nice guys. I hope the very best for them. Obviously, I'm totally biased because Niccolò de Masi has been both a friend and an investor in the Business Podcast Network. So I wish him well, but I don't really care how the stock performs. I'll be really curious to watch how this business grows and we can see that more because it is a public company.
That's Isn't it comforting to just know that wherever you are in the world, look up and planet's watching you.
Someone's watching you at all times, exactly.
Feeding the algorithm. The great algorithm in the sky.
What's that Pharrell tune with I'm happy, party like a room without a roof?
If
planet's coming over aboard, you might want that roof after all, Pharrell.
Planet's invited to every party. They're watching everything happen.
So are we here at the Drill Down Podcast. We're trying to keep an eye on everything. Let us know what we're missing. Hit us up on the Twitter at Drill Down Pod. We'd love to know what you think. We're grateful for your time, Isaac Webster. Happy Thanksgiving. Isaac Webster's our executive producer. Ben Wilson, our editor extraordinaire. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well up in Portland. Hope you enjoy yourself. Hope all our listeners enjoy themselves as well. I'm Corey Johnson. You've been listening to The Drill Down, which is a production of the Business Podcast Network.